Hey, welcome to the Friday morning edition of the Happy Hour Garage. I am your host, Shannon Yoakum, and I am broadcasting to you live from beautiful British Columbia. Before we get started today, I just want to address something that popped up in the media this morning. Ned Jarrett is alive and well. There was a horrible rumor flying all over Facebook and Twitter this morning that he had passed away. I spoke myself to Jason Jarrett, his grandson. He did not know this. The Jarretts are not really big on social media, and he did confirm to me that Ned is fine. I mean, he's not super well. Who would be at that age? You know, we all have things at that age, but he is alive. So I would like to dispel that rumor and apologize to anybody that saw that, because that was horrific. So, yeah, Ned, we love you, baby. And he is coming back on the show shortly. We're going to talk with him about the little incident with Jeff Gordon and Brad Keselowski, with Brad accusing Jeff of shouldn't be in the broadcast booth because of the closeness he has to some of the teams like Hendrick Motorsports and what have you. So we'll address all that with Ned in a week or two, and look forward to that very much. We are joined today by a really special guy that and I know Maureen and Buddy, who are also here with me, have been anxious to talk to. Your 1998 Rookie of the Year, 177 Cup starts. His win at Atlanta at the end of the 2000 season was spectacular. Please invite and welcome Jerry Nadeau, our Connecticut native, onto the show. How you doing, Jerry?
Hey, how are you? Good to hear from you.
Yeah, we've been really looking forward to talking to you. What are you doing these days? We'll start with that.
Well, it's warm out.
Yeah.
And just been kind of cleaning up. Today's cleanup day. Just doing the yard and doing some stuff around in the pool area and just cleaning up around the house. I just been doing a lot of ride and drive deals with obviously Brakes, who I've been working with Doug Herbert and Matt Riley, and did a couple with Lance King out in San Diego. And so, yeah, that's been fun. And obviously our newborn, Jordan Nadeau, with my wife, she's a blast. She's a year and a month old today, and she's just ready to go.
Oh, that is so sweet. Yeah, you have a couple children, don't you?
Yeah, I have Natalie, who's 13, and then Jordan.
Nice, nice. And does Natalie show any inclination to be around the racetrack?
It's hard to say. I mean, yeah, it would have been nice if they would have saw me racing and stuff. And, you know, I think they look at a lot of photos and obviously stuff that's on the computer, but that's probably the only hardest thing for me as a dad is, you know, seeing what their dad used to do. Obviously, I can't, you know, I don't do it today, which is unfortunate. But, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, it's kind of what happened in my career, and there's not much I can get out of that. Except, you know, obviously talking to them and them seeing some of the photos and pictures.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about the early years? I read somewhere that at 2 years old, your dad stuck you in the race car with a bottle of Windex and some paper towels and told you to clean the floorboards, and that got you started, and then at four and a half into a go-kart, and it went from there. Can you tell us a bit about your dad, who was also involved in racing, and how your career began?
Yeah, I want first, you know, happy Father's Day to all the dads this Sunday. My dad, he was my hero. You know, I remember at times, you know, my mom yelling at night, you know, to tell my dad to shut the race car off when we're, you know, 1 or 2 years old. And, you know, I remember him literally picking me up and putting me inside the car with a, you know, a bottle of Windex and some paper towels, and I would be inside cleaning his feet, cleaning the floorboard, cleaning the pedals. I mean, I was cleaning stuff that I probably shouldn't be cleaning, but it was fun. I mean, it was a good time, and, you know, he got me involved in karting at 4.5 years old. He put me in a go-kart. We used to live right next to a big parking lot, and he would let me loose in the parking lot. And every day after, you know, preschool, kindergarten, first grade, my dad, I would tug on my mom's dress, and she would come down and pull the ripcord on the four stroke, and I'd go out, you know, rumbling around in the parking lots. But racing's, yeah, it's been my whole life. I mean, that's it. I mean, every weekend, you know, I remember from 75 till the day the racetrack closed in 82, we would go to the racetrack every Saturday and sit in the stands and watch my dad race.
Karting is really big up here, Jerry. I live in Pennsylvania, and even my daughter, who's now in college, but a number of years she either would get in the seat of one of the junior dragsters or her dad would take her karting. It's every time I turn around, there's another place that opened up. I know that's how you got your start. Has your daughter been able to get a start in karting, or she doesn't?
No, I think I hate to say that. I'm going to stay away from that. I, you know, I did have a few go-karts, and I used to put them up at GoPro Motoplex and have a garage there. And, you know, me and my wife today and Natalie had a go-kart. Didn't seem that really interested in it. You know, she was doing cheerleading and gymnastics, and, you know, she'd go karting, but it wasn't to her like it was to me. And I'm sure if I was into the racing and if I was doing it week in, week out, I think I would definitely probably show more interest in getting her involved in it. But obviously, I don't know. To me, it just seems like it's a guy thing. But again, I love my kids to death, and you know, whatever they choose that they want to do in life, then I'll be 110% behind them.
Jerry, I have a fan question from James. He wants to know, which current driver do you pull for, or do you even still follow the sport?
You know, I don't follow it heavily. I used to, it seems like, but it, I don't know. I enjoy the chase. I think it's kind of fun and interesting, and it makes it more valuable for a fan to watch, just because you know, you only have whatever it is, the 16 drivers that are into the chase. And obviously it goes down to 8, then the 4. That seems interesting. But obviously, Kyle Busch, I've been a fan of his since he came on board, since the time when NASCAR pulled him out of Michigan, where he couldn't race when he was only 15, and the kid was fast. I kind of looked at that, and I think he's been a big inspiration to me, and watching him grow up and how he came back after his accident last year I think it was Daytona, and he came back and won the championship. That was pretty cool. I've always been a fan of his, and I think as a racer, I kind of like somebody who drives on the edge and gives it all they got and, you know, goes for the win, and he seems like that type of person. So I kind of liked him, but I like a lot of drivers. I have nothing against. I think Jeff was absolutely amazing, you know, growing up with him and being on the same team with him at Hendricks, now Jimmy. I mean, it's a good crop. I don't know if the racing's as good as it was back then. In my eyes, it just seems like it's changed a lot. And, you know, kind of glad I'm not there. But again, I don't know. I mean, if they had to say for barriers at Richmond, you know, I would probably, you know, still be doing it. And obviously I'd probably look at the racing a little bit different than I do now.
Matter of fact, that leads me actually to my question about the safer barriers. I mean, Larry Mack is probably one of the biggest proponents of safer barriers, and he goes on a lot about it. I'm sure that safer barriers would have changed your accident significantly, because you hit at Richmond in an area where there wasn't, and some areas there still don't. Can you? I know you don't remember the accident at all, but I'm sure you've seen it a million times on YouTube and stuff like that. Walk us through some of that and your long recovery there.
If you look at it, it was a simple accident. I don't recall the day of the wreck. I've seen videos, talked to many people, and I know we were fast. I think we were the fastest in happy hour at the time, and I came in to change shocks and went back out, and that's when I lost it in turn one and whopped the wall. It was obviously a big impact. It doesn't look bad, but I think it was just a perfect hit. NASCAR makes everybody wear black boxes on the cars, and from what I recall, what they said to me, it was the biggest hit ever recorded. I think it was 121 Gs.
Right.
And it actually hit twice in the millisecond, because it hit flush, but it hit the front, I think, first at 121, then it slapped the back at 121. So go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I know one day Junior said something about your crash and compared it to his in the same area. And I think he said you hit, if his was 40, registered at 40, yours was three times worse.
Yeah.
And it caused, for him, it has caused issues. I mean, he still sees treatment doctors at the University of Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Racing's a dangerous sport. If you have a better way at doing things in life, then I would probably choose that way. But for me, racing was all my life. Watching my dad and obviously a big fan of NASCAR, and watching Earnhardt and Petty's and Waltrip. And, I think when I was 18, 19, I graduated high school, and I left. I mean, I wanted to come down south, and I literally had $200 in my pocket, and I got into my green Oldsmobile diesel, and I smoked all the way down. The car did, not me. Smoked all the way down from Connecticut to Charlotte, and had some meetings with Tom Cotter and Todd Moore, and that's how my career started. I came down here. I lived in an apartment. I lived in trailers. I lived everywhere, and finally got my break. And I think it was 97. We wrote a letter to all the Cup teams, and one team answered, and it was Richard Jackson Motorsports, who fielded Cup cars for Morgan Shepherd. And I worked for him for probably 5 or 6 months, spotting for Morgan. And I finally kind of gave, not really an ultimatum, but I basically said, Richard, what's it going to take for me to get one of your cars, and let's go do an ARCA race somewhere? And he said, I tell you what, Jerry, he says, there's an ARCA race coming up in Charlotte. If you can come up with about 15 to 20,000 for sponsorship, I can put you in the ARCA car at Charlotte. So I literally called everybody, but my mom and dad, raised the money, gave them a check, did the ARCA race. We finished second, and literally that week, Morgan Shepherd went to a new team. I think it was Jasper Motorsports, and Richard didn't have a driver for the Cup race. And Richard said, "Hey, Jerry, you want to race at Michigan?" So here's the guy that was making $250 a week, working in the shop, cleaning, answering calls, spotting for Morgan Shepherd. And then I literally went from there, did the ARCA race, and did the Cup race the week after. So it happened fast. It happened crazy, but, it was meant to be. And that's kind of how my career got started.
I have kind of a two-part question from Brett. He wants to know about your experience in the big break with HMS, and he also would like to know, how did it feel to beat Earnhardt in 2000? And do you realize, Jerry, that was the last race Dale completed.
I have that picture. Won. Yeah, I have that picture in my office. It's so eerie, the photo, because it's me on the bottom and on the top, and he's giving me the thumbs up, slapping my door, you know, congratulating me. And you can't see him in the car because his window was so pitted. And me, you can see everything, you know, in the car because I was up front. I wasn't really catching all the debris and stuff. So, yeah, that's a really cool picture. I didn't get your first question, what you meant by H&F.
He wanted to know what your experience was like there and how it felt to get the big break with the big team.
At Hendrick.
Yeah, again, that I need to address and thank Tom Cotter and Todd Moore for getting me into that deal. They had a sponsorship with Michael Holligan, and they chose me as a driver, and Hendrick went ahead and did that. And I was with Hendrick for 3 years, and that was a big break. I mean, we had really good runs, and we just had awful, awful bad luck. I mean, there was probably 3 or 4 or 5 races that we could have easily won, and we just, we weren't able to do it. I mean, the year after I won that race at Atlanta, we led the next Atlanta race till the last lap. We had a six second lead, and I ran out of fuel coming off turn two, and we coasted across the line, you know, finishing third. My luck hasn't been the best. Obviously people make their own luck, which is good for me. I was just a wide open type of guy. I got let go from Hendrick and went to Petty's, and we went to Sonoma, and, you know, wasn't the best qualifying. I think we qualified like 18th, but I love road racing. And, we went out there and we were leading the race with 2 laps to go with, again, a 6 or 7 second lead over Ricky Rudd. And we broke a rear end gear the last turn and, gave the win to Ricky, his last cup win. So me and Ricky are good friends. He actually lives right down the road. So we're good buddies, but it's just, yeah, that's kind of how my whole life's been with racing. Had great success in road racing, great success in karting. You know, but when you get to the big time in NASCAR, everything's got to fall in the right place. And,
you had pretty good races at Vegas too. I think your average finish there is pretty good as well. Well, your average start is good. Like you say, sometimes you have issues going through. I mean, all drivers do, right? But your road courses and some of those mile and a halfs, you seem to do pretty good at those.
Yeah, because you're on the edge, and that's kind of, I don't know if it's my forte or not. I just kind of enjoy being on the ragged edge with the cars. And back then when we used to race, you know, the radial tires were a big deal. If you slipped a little bit, the car was gone. But there was a fine line that you can hold on to. And it's weird. It's funny. It's my first test with Bill Elliott back in 98, my first season as a rookie. We went to Atlanta. And I balled his car up. I put on fire in turn 3 and 4. And I absolutely hated it. And I was like, no way. This is crazy. So it's funny how I got my first win there at Atlanta. It was cool. It's definitely, you know, I was a racer and still is. But, you know, unfortunately not doing it as a profession. But, I have some good memories.
Tell us about Atlanta. I mean, that's your win. Tell us the emotions of that day for you. Can you step us through that?
Yeah, I mean, we were fast. We were fast at mile and a half racetracks, like you said earlier. You know, Charlotte, we had some really, really good runs. And I think the 600, we led a lot of laps. And it rained and there was 30 laps to go, and we ended up losing a cylinder. But Atlanta was just something special. I don't know if it's because the track had a lot of grip, but that you lose the tires really, really fast. And I don't know. I got into a groove and I just loved it. The way the track was, it was very wide. You can run up top, middle, very bottom. And, you know, our car was just, the setup was just perfect. You know, I think all probably six or seven races that I ran there with Hendricks and various other, some other teams, I was just really, really fast there. I'm not sure if it's because of the eggshell, the way it was paved, the way, how fast you lost the grip in the car. It just seemed like it really suited my style a lot better than most other tracks.
Yeah, some tracks seem to suit people's styles, and I was going to ask you what your favorite track is. One of the questions that people always say to me is, can you ask, what was your favorite track, Jerry, and your least favorite track?
I totally, totally enjoyed Darlington. Didn't have any great success. So I think my best finish there was like 7th or 8th in the cup race. We led in 2002. We actually spun. While we were leading, brought to yellow, but we were still like 2nd or 3rd after the spin with the 01 Army car. I think that was in 2003, actually. The year I got hurt in. Bristol is a lot of fun. Really, as a racer, I think any time you race is fun. I didn't really enjoy Pocono. Not really sure why. Just never really suited my style. I think I was more or less, when you're having a tough day there, you can't wait till the race ends, you know.
Drivers say that a lot. That's my home track. That's okay. I get to go there a lot. And one of the things that drivers say is, if you don't hit your setup car, especially for the tunnel turn, your day's just done. You could trash it, you know, and it can't be fixed. And I guess I don't know enough about car engines to understand that whole thing, but I've listened to enough of the drivers on race day, talk about missing the setup there.
Yeah, and it's like that with any track, but it seemed like for more of that was Pocono. It seemed like it was more of a longer day when things weren't going well.
Right,
but yeah,
because it was 500 miles then.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Buddy.
Jerry, you're a survivor and a hell of a guy, and I just wanted you to tell our listeners a little bit about what you went through after the accident and your recovery, just to maybe give others that have suffered a TBI a little bit of encouragement to see how far you've come from where you were.
It's hard to say. I mean, you know, when you damage your, it's like any kind of other computer. If you damage your computer, it's never going to work right. I feel like I'm at the best I've ever been. But it's not quite like it needs to be. And, I feel it. I feel for any person that's had TBI or has been unconscious for a long time. I was unconscious for 21 days. And, they literally put me in a sedated coma because I had a lot of broken bones and stuff from that accident. And, I think the biggest thing is when I woke up, I couldn't feel my whole left side of my body. And, it's tough. I mean, I feel for everyone. I think the biggest thing is just don't quit. You're alive, you're well. There's so many other bad situations in life than being here and being able to get up and being able to eat. And some aren't able to eat on their own. But the biggest thing is just you know, try to be inspired by something to keep you motivated. And I think the biggest thing for me is my kids. They inspire me a lot. They literally get me going and, you know, do a lot of fun things with them and, you know, watch them grow. But again, yeah, I mean, I definitely have those times where it gets really tough for me. And sometimes I wonder why I'm still here, you know? But when I look at them, it gives me that extra boost to say, okay, keep going. So, yeah, my life hasn't been the easiest.
Jerry, I have kind of a follow-up fan question from Jeff. Have you raced or attempted a comeback since the injury at Richmond?
I did test. I think I prematurely got in the car almost too fast. I think 6 or 7 months after I got let go from the hospital, I got back in a car with MB2 Motorsports, U.S. Army car. We tested at Concord. But again, I wasn't, I still couldn't seem to feel up my left side. I almost felt like there was three other cars in front of me when there was only one car in front of me. So your vision's kind of deteriorated a little bit. But I've gotten used to that. I did start making a comeback, to do a road race. I went to Sebring, Florida, and tested BMW sports car. And the test was going great. And I had a phone call that my dad was sick. And he has cancer. And he literally only had like 1 to 3 months to live. And I didn't know that until I left home. I brought him to the hospital because he was coughing. And then literally the next week when I was in Sebring, his doctor called me and says, hey, I hate to tell you this, but your dad has ATC, which is anaplastic thyroid cancer, and we don't see him living more than 3 months. So that kind of took racing off the back burner. You know, I flew home, or actually drove from Sebring up to Raleigh to Duke Hospital and was with my dad for a month and a half there. Then we brought him home to Troutman, and he passed away peacefully. So, yeah, that kind of, I started to make a comeback, but then it kind of got hiccuped a little bit, and I never really went back after it again. I just, you know, I'm 30, actually I'm 40, 46 today, so I thought.
Today?
Yeah, 46 today, so, well, no, not today. Today's not my birthday.
Your birthday's in September, isn't it?
Yeah. So, yeah, I just got deteriorated by that, and I just kind of lost the fight to go back.
Now, you mentored for a while.
I did.
And that was interesting to read about that. I can't imagine the courage that took from you, and I don't blame you at all for walking away from that. That must have been tough. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I did help out a few guys. I worked with Davey Gillen for almost a season with the Busch cars, and I think the last race I did with him was in Kentucky, and I gave him a little bit of encouragement, and I said, hey, dude, I got to walk away from this, just because I don't know if it really fit my style to be there and to be on the spotter stand and walking them through and helping them out. And he actually won that race, and he went on to Cup after that race. So then I worked with Jeffrey Earnhardt a little bit in the trucks. And I think I was at Phoenix spotting for Jeffrey, and something happened where I said, I got to step away. I just felt really different, you know, being a driver in Cup, and all of a sudden being kind of like on the sideline. I just kind of lost myself there a little bit. And I just, that was it. That was my last time I think I actually worked with the driver in the NASCAR series, was when I helped out Jeffrey.
Well, that's got to be tough, and I don't think anybody would critique that from you at all. I think you're pretty brave just to do that. Tell me about your, and do you still do this with the eBay stuff?
eBay, what is eBay?
Well,
that mean
I read somewhere that you like to shop there and sell, buy and sell.
Well, no, I used to do a lot of stupid stuff online. You know, I used to bid on things and win it cheap and then sell it on eBay. I used to get on a site, I think it was called BZid, and I used to get stuff fairly cheap. But again, it's just something you got to spend a lot of time in. I mean, I did that for years, and you know, I lost focus a little bit on that. But I think with that stuff, if you're really into it and you really want to take charge on online stuff, you really got to put a lot of time and effort into it. And I couldn't see myself doing that now. And I'm kind of glad that I got out of it, but it's actually fun just to watch and see people battling, going after things, you know, for dirt cheap. I mean, you got to have a lot of bids to spend. And obviously when to get a lot of bids, you have to spend money to do it. And, yeah, I just, it was fun for a little while, but I lost track and lost my interest in doing that. Now it's, you know, when you have kids in your life, you got to watch them grow up and stay involved with them. And obviously you got to watch your property too. I live in Davidson, and I've got, you know, not much, about an acre and a half of land. And for me, it's, you know, to mow the yard is a big job for me. You know, I mean, mow the yard and take care of this and take care of that.
I have a fan question from Michael. Although you raced with some NASCAR legends like Dale Earnhardt, Jeff Gordon, Dale Jarrett, and so forth, Hall of Famers, what NASCAR legend prior to your career would you have most wanted to race against, such as Richard Petty, David Pearson, Darrell Walford? Well, you'd raced against Darrell Walford, so on.
Tiny Lund.
Ah.
I've got a poster in my garage of Tiny Lund on my back wall. And he was a big, burly, tough racer. Kind of, you know, remind me a little bit of Tony Stewart when I was racing with Tony, you know, good guy. I think he would have been nice to race against guys like that. Even guys like AJ Foyt. I know he did a few cup races in his life. But obviously my growing up, I was really headed towards Formula One, you know, racing in Europe for a year in Formula Opel and doing really well. And I did a test in the F3000 car. And that went well, and I was kind of in the middle. I was like, do I go towards Formula One, or do I go towards NASCAR? And I kind of got nervous. I didn't really have anybody to fall back on or talk to, and that's when I decided to come back home and focus mostly on getting into NASCAR. And that was in 96 when I was in Europe for a year. Racing out there.
The Le Mans is on this weekend. Is that something that you watch?
The what now?
The Le Mans.
Le Mans. Yeah, no, Le Mans. I love it. I listen, if you were at my house and you looked at my DVR, everything that comes on in motorsports is taped. So I literally, when I put my head, you know, get my head in the bed, I literally flip on the DVR, or sometimes I go down in the movie room and just hit the DVR and just, you know, watch some of the races that went on. I love FIA World Rally Cross racing. I love MotoGP. I'm a big fan of that. Formula One, touring cars, everything. I'm just a motorhead. I love racing. I love competition. And obviously I love to root for the underdogs, the guys that can do it on any given day. It's just a matter of everything working out perfect for them.
like when the when Michael Shank won the what was that one, the Rolex, I think it was years ago. That, I mean, he was considered to be an underdog. That was pretty cool. Yes. Did you see all that?
Yes, that was great. Yeah, I mean, I'm into that. I love that, man. You know, I don't, my wife's not too keen on it, but you know, especially when the DVR only tapes two shows at once, and if she wants to watch the show, she can't because my racing's getting taped. So
we have that struggle in our house too.
Yep, same here.
Yeah, I'm just a motorhead. I'm a racing guy. I love it, and I don't think I can ever take it out of me. It's just part of my life. And, you know, I think growing up, my dad had a business, which was roofing. And I think my dad looked at my life as taking over his business and racing on the weekends, like either Thompson or Stafford in a modified, and then working during the week roofing houses. And I don't know, I couldn't see myself doing that. I loved working with my dad, but I thought there was a better way of making a living. and that's when I decided to pack my bags and move down south. He thought it was a little crazy, but overall, I think he was excited and happy that I made it. And he actually, my parents moved down here after my accident. So yeah, my dad was my best friend. And, you know, it was unfortunate what happened to him in 2007. But I see my mom all the time. She literally just left my house about an hour ago. And, you know, I stay close with my family very much.
Oh, that's great. Do you have, you mentioned your garage, so you've got some posters out there and all. Do you tinker around in your garage? Do you work on your own cars?
No, I have a shop that it's very fortunate. I have a building that I built, a little shop when I was racing, and I literally have it leased out to a guy who sells cars. So I do nothing in my shop, but my dad built a little shop on his property, and unfortunately, my mom has got to sell that place because it's too big. My dad has a, you know, 15 acres, little house, and we have a little shop, and it's too much stuff for my mom to take care of. So she's going to sell that place. But now I'm in the time where I've got to get all my stuff out of there. I've actually got my dad's Corvette on eBay. And I think it'll hopefully sell by Sunday. So yeah, I'm in the process of taking care of that. And, The posters, obviously, they're in my office in my house. I keep some nice memorabilia on my wall, and so yeah, I kind of know what I remember everything. I remember everything about racing. The accident didn't take that away from me. It just did some things to my head that you know, it's hard to explain. I don't think anybody would understand unless they've had TBI.
Yeah, no, I suffered a TBI. In a rock climbing fall in 2002. So I totally get, you know, you're like me. We're very fortunate that we still have our memories, because I do also. I don't remember that day. I don't remember about a month of time, but that's it. So that works. We've talked to, you know, other drivers that have also suffered that, you know, similar injuries. Mm-hmm. And have lost blocks of time. But as long as you don't, you sound so, you sound wonderful. Like you're still involved in things. And, you know, that's always a really good sign. So what is your week like today? What do you do, you know?
I don't know what goes on until that day. I mean, I know today I have an interview with another lady from my brother-in-law from Florida mentioned to me, you know, I've had so many people tell me that I should do a book and, you know, about my life and what I've done and stuff. And I've talked to so many people in the past, you know, from my accident till now. And I never really looked at that much as far as doing a book. But my brother-in-law says you should just do something. And so I have an interview with this lady who is going to be like a ghostwriter, and it's our first little interview. So we're going to talk about stuff like that at 2 o'clock today. And my next little work day besides everyday stuff is I do a break school at ZMAX in a couple weeks. We do a school there, and I may get deal. Like I may do a Honda deal. I may do a Toyota deal. My funnest job that I've had to date, which was last November, I went to Japan for 10 days and did a ride and drive deal with the Lexus LFA around Fuji Speedway. And that right there, I literally broke down and like, oh my God, I fell in heaven. I literally loved it, but there's not a lot of those jobs out there. And I did write a letter to Ron Nelson who put me up on that and literally just loved it. But again, that was last November, and I was hoping that I was going to get something like that. But, you know, I think, it just never happened. And, you know, I'm on my own. I don't have anybody helping as far as promoting or getting me involved in things. It's just me, my wife, and my two kids, and my mother who's down the road. And I've got friends. I've got people that I talk to every now and then. But, you know, when you're a racer, you have so many people taking care of things. You know, when you're literally doing it every week, you're doing appearances, you're doing stuff, everything stops after that day. You know, when I had that accident, you know, I think I put myself in a more particular position because I, you know, fell into deep depression, you know, especially after my dad passed away, and I just gave up on everything. I didn't, you know, answer a lot of phone calls. I didn't call people back. So I put a lot of stuff on my head regarding that. But I think if people were in my mind and really would feel what I felt all those years, they would understand. I'm still here. I love racing, and I love everybody that helped me out. It's just, it's hard to really, I mean, even now, I Brian France sends me a license to go to the races at anywhere I want to go. And, I haven't been to a race. I'm not sure why I haven't gone to one. Even the Charlotte race that was here a week ago, I haven't been to a race. So who knows? I mean, I'm sure one day I may pop in. But I did, my last one was 8 years ago. I stepped into the stands at Charlotte, me and my wife, and we watched a race there. So,
Jerry, first of all, Jack Martin and Ed Hines wanted me to publicly thank you for coming to their event at the 600 weekend at Pat Rogers Harley-Davidson.
Yes, yeah, a lot of fun.
And
a lot of fun. Butch, got to see a lot of good people. I know Allison and some good people, some old crew chiefs that were there, and Mickey York, who ran the Baby Grand years ago. It was very, very fun experience. I think I've been asked to go there many years, and I never went. I think a lot of it was because I was down, and this year I went to it, and it literally was a blast. So, yeah, I look forward to doing many more down the road.
I wanted to ask you, have you ever spoken with Bobby Allison? Since you both suffered similar injuries, I thought maybe y'all might have gotten together.
No, it's funny. As I seen him one time late at night at a Food Lion store, we ran into each other and we talked. He knew who I was. I definitely knew who he was. And we kind of left it at that. I don't know. It's not really sure why it never transpired into something bigger. I think I would have loved to. I mean, it would be cool to call him and say, hey, can I spend the afternoon with you and just talk and talk about stuff. That would be very cool on my end. I don't know how cool it would be on his end, you know, if you know what I mean. But yeah, I mean, it'd be nice to talk about stuff like that. I did contact, I think it was Robbie Allison, his nephew, who was looking to get into stock cars, and this is Davey's son.
Yeah, it's his grandson.
Bobby's grandson, Davey's son, I think, Robbie. And, you know, he was actually at that show, too, with Bobby the last couple weeks. So, yeah, I mean, it'd be cool. It'd be cool, definitely. But obviously everybody does their thing, and you know, I look up to, you know, Bobby as anybody else would. You know, he was a star in NASCAR, and he did his life, and, you know, obviously he's on his tail end part of life. But me, I'm still, 46 and, you know, looking to see what my next, trying to find my next venture. You know, obviously the racing, the stuff I did in Japan, you know, giving rides was, I could do that every week. My wife probably wouldn't like that, but for me as a driver, that's something that really intrigued me.
Have you ever, have you had a chance to talk to Lauren Rainier? I'm asking that because he's been involved with Robbie's, with his career recently, but he's running an awful lot of those young kids successfully, you might say, in the ARCA series right now. We've talked to him. He's a great guy. He would be an interesting guy, you know. I mean, maybe it wouldn't be that your job would be at a racetrack. You know, it might be that, some of these young kids, they need confidence, I think.
Yeah. Just to talk to them. I'd love that. I did. It's funny, is his wife was my PR lady on my rookie year with Bill Elliott.
Small world.
I can't recall her name, but they don't live very far from me at all. And I do have his number, and I think we talked a while back, and I don't know. We just never... Again, it could have been me not pressing forward on things. But yeah, no, he's definitely somebody that, you know, somebody to be reckoned with to talk as far as, I mean, I love dealing with people. I love talking to people. I have two simulators here in my house, and I've, you know, I've worked with other guys on racing. Andy Lally, I don't know if you guys know him. He's a road racer, and he did a few cup races, and he actually came to my house and we did some simulation races on my simulator. So yeah, I mean, that's something I love working with young kids. So yeah, if something comes up again, then it's obviously something to look at.
I'm glad you're involved in the Doug Hebert Brakes thing. I think that's a wonderful program that he's got there. I mean, he's lost his two sons, and I mean, it's just an inspiring story. And it's does that give you inspiration working over there? Does that help you?
Well, I think if I didn't have kids, I don't know if it would fit for me, but I never knew this. I mean, you think 6,000 to 7,000 kids die every year because of driving accidents, especially from the age of 16 to 19. And it literally makes me sick to my stomach to think about that. But I've got a 13-year-old and a 1-year-old, and they're one day going to have their license. And I don't know if driver's ed does anything for you besides maybe parallel park or make this left-hand turn or make this right-hand turn. And I think you have to be prepared for anything on driving roads today. You know, you got people, especially now with the cell phones. I've seen so many people with their cell phones in their ears or they're texting, and it makes me sick because these people are living on the edge of death because anything can happen. You know, you take your eyes off the road for 2 seconds, literally another car could be in front of you, or somebody could be coming into your lane. So, yeah, it makes it scary. So, yeah, I'm very, very honored and happy to be working with Doug Herbert and working with these kids. And we put them through a lot of peculiar situations. You know, we put them in wheel drop-off scenarios. We put them in hard braking. We put them in a slalom course. We actually put them on the skid pad to learn how to actually control a car in the slide. And also, if they lose control, what do you do? Do you get back in the gas? Do you get back in the brake? There's so many scenarios that we put them in that I think it's the greatest school. And I think every teenager, before they get their license or at least have their permit, and before they're on the road with a full license, should go through this course, no doubt. I mean, that should be the law. You have to go through a Doug Herbert brakes driving school before you can actually get your full license.
That'd be good.
That would be cool. Yeah.
Yes. And if Natalie, you know, get her through that, and then your next worries will be boys.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, and it's funny, you get, you know, half of them are boys and half of them are girls. You know, it's funny. I treat every student that's in my car. We usually have three students, and I treat every student like they're my own kid. And I give them a good speech and a good talk over. And at times, if I feel like these kids are not ready, I will particularly go to the side and talk to the parents and say, I think your kid needs more time, you know? So, it's amazing that you're giving these 16-year-old kids a full license to drive a 3,000-pound missile on the road that kills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it scares you. It scares me.
Oh,
I mean,
God,
you think
yeah.
about, you know, the way I drive, I'm going to tell you how I drive every day. When I'm on a two-lane road and I see another car coming my way, I'm literally looking for a way out. If that guy falls asleep or answers a phone or literally texts and swerves into my lane, I'm already thinking way ahead of them. I'm already thinking, okay, where am I going to go? Okay, they're past. You know what I mean? That's how I look at life now. And again, it could be because of my accident. And again, I think the school obviously helped me open my eyes a little bit more to watch out for others, because when you're coming into an intersection and it's green on your way and it's red on the other way, you got to look for those other guys, make sure that they're going to stop, because you never know. You see so many people and you see videos of people blown through red lights and literally, you know, costing someone else's life or, you know, seriously injuring somebody because they weren't paying attention.
Yeah, you know what? I so agree with that. And I actually think they should raise the driving limit. I think at 16 is way too young. You know, 18 or more would be, you know, and I don't even have kids.
17 yeah. and a half in New Jersey, where I raised my daughter. That's 17 yeah. and a half. And I'm telling yeah. you, it saves lives. Just mm-hmm. that 1 year and a half. Oh, and you can't, until you're 18 and a half, you can't have another young driver in the car with you. So you have to have another senior driver. So there's a junior license and a senior license.
Yeah, we make them put magnets. There's a magnetic big green N in BC, at least, in my province.
Back,
yeah,
right?
They have to do that, and they can't drive after dark. They're not allowed on highways, et cetera. And we've got some driving schools here, too, and I'm a big fan of those, a big believer. I still can't parallel park worth a damn.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a good school, and I think the other schools that I've done, too, have been fairly fun, too, with, you know, working with Ron Nelson and also Lance King doing the Honda deal in San Diego about a month ago. That was a lot of fun. So, yeah, anything to do with driving for your teens. I mean, if you want your teens to live, they definitely need to go to a driving school. You have to hire somebody to do it. But as far as with Doug Herbert, I mean, it's fairly cheap. I think it's $99, but you obviously get that money back after the school's over. Or you can donate it to the school. But it's definitely a good thing. And I think, if it wasn't for what happened to his two boys, I don't know if there would be a school like that. Mm-hmm. So I think, Doug, for, going what he went through with his boys to actually starting a school that to save lives. So very, very cool.
That and that actually leads me to my wind-up question with you. It sounds to me like you're doing much better now, maybe thanks to the inspiration that a guy like Doug provides, that, mm-hmm. was such a devastating loss to move on. And it sounds to me like you're on the right track. You're very well-spoken. Your memory is excellent. And, I can't tell you. We've really enjoyed it. I know Maureen has a buddy is just tied up right now with Jason Jarrett, but... he'll be coming back on shortly. Buddy, I see you're back. Do you have you had a fan question that I know you wanted to ask Jerry before Jason called you there? Go ahead. Oh, I lost.
Uh-oh.
There. No, he's coming back. He just couldn't phone in. Well, he'll be back in a second. poor buddy. He gets a phone right in the middle of the show. that's live radio for you, right?
Well, sadly, he had to take it. If you had been on Facebook earlier this morning, Jerry, you would have seen the rumors going around that Ned Jarrett had passed away. And we didn't promote anything about that because Ned will be coming back onto our show in a few weeks. Again, he's been one of our special guests before. I just love him. And it was devastating to see something on Facebook that it turned out not to be true.
Yeah, you see a lot of devastating things. I don't know why my wife, to be honest, I mean, nothing against Facebook. I sometimes, it's intriguing to look at and it's fun to, it's neat to, it's entertaining. Facebook is entertaining.
At times.
And you see a lot of things on there that it's like so bogus. And I don't pay attention to any of that stuff when they say that things. For me, I look at it because it's entertaining. I think it's fun. So there's a lot of things, a lot of neat things on there that they show. In some ways I look at it like I asked my wife, why did you put me back on there? You know what I mean? But it's fun. I mean, there's people that I haven't talked in years that I have got my relationship back with them on Facebook, and I keep up with a lot of things, and it's fun. I hate it when I look at Facebook and it shows who won the race when I'm pissed because it hasn't come on. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing I get mad about with Facebook is there's times that something just ended and somebody posted on there and it's like, oh, you ding dong. Why did you do that? Why did you ruin my night? You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's, you got to keep social media off when you got races recorded. I know I've got to record the one on Sunday cause it's Father's Day and I'm going out with my dad and, I've got to turn it off because I don't want to know who's won until I actually watched it. But that never happens because somebody will text me or tweet me or something flashes up on my screen and you can't avoid it. But, it's all in how it gets there anyways. But we'd like to really thank you a lot for coming on. And good luck with your book. I think the book would be very therapeutic and good. And, despite what you think maybe deep down is people are interested in you and what you've done and what you've been through. It's fascinating to them. And it's all part of the history of our sport. It's people like you that inspired NASCAR perhaps to do more with these safer barriers so that we don't have any more of these. I mean, it is horrific. It stole a part of your life. And I'm really glad that you are well on the road to getting back into where you've been. And that thing at Pat Rogers Concord thing, I've been to that before too. And I'm glad you went because it's, I'm sure you enjoyed that thoroughly.
No, that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. Well, guys, listen, thank you. I appreciate it. I love it. I think, if I can do more of these and just talk about everything on life itself, I think it's fun. I mean, I know we got a little sidetracked on a lot of other stuff and we, got into talking about, working with brakes. But obviously, my racing was a point in my life. And obviously, there's a lot of other points that I deal with now. And obviously, one of them is brakes. So again, thank you guys, and hopefully we'll talk to you guys again down the road.
Yeah, we will definitely have you on again, and we can talk some more about the early days and all that fun stuff and what you're currently doing. I think we've lost Buddy. He may be still talking to Jason there, so I know he says thank you very much, and we sure appreciate you coming on.
Okay, take care.
Thank you, Jerry.
Bye-bye.